If you have your Bibles, let's turn to Exodus chapter 21. Remember that Exodus chapter 21 is about the carrying out of justice. Verse 1 starts off, "Now these are the judgments that God is wanting to set before the children of Israel." And I'm going to continue the restatement and the restatement of this theme. God is concerned about justice. God is concerned about justice. Justice is based upon the truth of the law. Fairness, as we know it, is based upon emotion. God is concerned about justice. Sometimes a judge might feel sorry for someone, and if a judge feels sorry for someone, he possibly will be influenced to do something that is unjust in order to be fair. Because fairness is what is in his mind, not based upon the law. Now, being fair can be just, but we've got to be careful that our fairness is based upon justice. Let's quote that verse that I've tried to have you memorize. You can look at it. It's right there on the screen for you. This talks about who our God is with a reference before and after. Deuteronomy 32:4. "He is the rock, His work is perfect, for all His ways are judgment, a God of truth and without iniquity, just and right is He." So here we are in Exodus 21. That's what we know our God to be. And there's two main categories of justice in chapter 21. Last week we looked at slavery justice and what God is telling them about servants and slaves. Tonight we're looking at injury justice. What the Bible says, what God was teaching His people. Remember, this is what kind of a form of government? Does anybody remember? It's a theocracy where God is the one who rules. And so we're going to see in this first part that we're going to get to tonight, injuries caused by man. First of all, verses 12 to 14, injury that results in murder. Let's look at verses 12 to 14. "He that smiteth a man so that he die shall be surely put to death. And if a man lie not in wait, but God deliver him into his hand, then I will appoint thee a place whither he shall flee. But if a man come presumptuously upon his neighbor to slay him with guile, thou shalt take him from mine altar, that he may die." Question, do you believe that capital punishment is fair? Do you believe that capital punishment is just? It's amazing that we even have to address something like this. But today, people are becoming very upset that people are being executed for a murder that they've committed, premeditated murder. Let's look here at the fact that the Bible is talking in verses 12 and 14 about intentional murder. We call that premeditated. Premeditated basically means that it's characterized by deliberate purpose, previous consideration, and some degree of planning. And that's what you see happening in verse 12 and verse 14. "He that smiteth a man," he's premeditated this. He's thought about this in advance. And then you see that the punishment is in accordance with what God told Noah way back before the giving of the law in Genesis chapter 9 and verse 6. So the authority to execute God's judgment on a murderer is delegated by God to man to do so. I found this in a commentary. I thought this was good that I wanted you to see this. Life, in essence, is the property of God. The possession of it is leased to human beings for a number of years. This lease can be extended or contracted in accordance with God's will. Can you think of anybody in the Bible whose life was extended? Think Hezekiah. That's up to God. That's up for God to decide. That's according to God's will. That is not up for man to make that decision. He goes on to say, "When a man arrogates to himself the right of ownership on the life of human beings and interferes with the right of enjoyment of life by taking it away, that is by killing it, he has violated one of the essential laws of God and therefore forfeits his own right to the possession of life." I thought that was a very good quote. You see, a man who was guilty of murder could not be saved. Even if he would go into the tabernacle or into the temple and cling to the horns on the altar, he still had to be executed. That was typically a place of safety. Any innocent blood shed at Yahweh's altar would be sacrilege, but not the execution of a guilty man. You know of anybody who fled to the altar? Clung to the horns on the altar for fear of his life? He was a good man at one time. His name was Joab. But David, before he died, gave these instructions to Solomon, his son, and said, you remember what Joab did. Because Joab premeditated the death of some men under the leadership of the northern kingdom, what later became the northern kingdom. If a man is involved in intentional murder and he fled to a city of refuge, remember the cities of refuge that it talks about in Joshua? That city was provided for the protection of those who killed somebody else unintentionally. In fact, the example is even given in the Bible. If two men are out in the woods and they're swinging their axe and the axe head flies off, strikes the other man and he dies, the avenger of blood is going to come after this man. This man who had the axe head fly off can run to a city of refuge so that a trial can take place and the facts can be found out and that man's life can be spared if he was not guilty, if he did it unintentionally. But if a man involved in an intentional murder fled to a city of refuge, you'll find in Deuteronomy chapter 19, verses 11, that city, the city authorities had to give him up to the avenger of blood so that that man could slay him. That's when it's an intentional murder. But we also see in verse 13 an unintentional murder take place. If a man does not lie in wait, but God deliver him into his hand, then I will appoint thee a place whither he shall flee. We call this today manslaughter. Manslaughter is defined this way, at least according to the American Heritage Dictionary, the unlawful killing of one human being by another without express or implied intent to do injury. This is where God provided cities of refuge. Also talked about there in Deuteronomy chapter 19, where that man could flee. By the way, what if a man killed somebody unintentionally, but he was known to be careless in that area? It's not addressed here about men, but if you go on later in this chapter, look at verse 29. You look at verse 28, it says, if an ox gore a man or a woman that they die, then the ox shall be surely stoned and his flesh shall not be eaten, but the owner of the ox shall be quit. But if the ox were wont to push with his horn in time past, and it hath been testified to his owner, and he hath not kept him in, but that he hath killed a man or a woman, the ox shall be stoned. Look at what happens to the owner. The owner shall also be put to death. If he knew that that's the way that ox was, and he didn't provide for that ox to be either put to death early or penned in, then he was to be put to death. I ask you the question, what if there's a man who's been caught drinking and driving before? And he's known to be a drunk driver. And then he unintentionally, I'm putting that in quotes, kills somebody when he drives drunk. What do you think should happen to him? Do you think we might get rid of drunk driving in this country if we would follow that principle there? You say, that's not fair. I'm not talking about what's fair. I'm talking about what's just. And that's what we need to start applying in our laws. Okay, well, that's injury that results in murder. Let's go to the second one, injury to parents. Notice what it says there in verse 15. He that smiteth his father or his mother shall be surely put to death. Do you know of anybody, any children who strike at their parents? You know what I see happening with little kids sometimes? And parents just kind of laugh it off. Is their little kid will come up and start boxing them and hitting them out of anger. That better be nipped in the bud. If that had happened in Israel, and that child grew up and did the same thing, what are they supposed to do to him? You put him to death. You know, folks, God is serious when he says in the previous chapter, honor your father and your mother. That is a very serious thing. Violently beating a parent, even if the parent did not die, it doesn't say anything about the parent dying here. Violently beating a parent was to be punished in the same way that a murderer was punished. George Bush, not the president, I've got to say that because there's some people who come here who aren't familiar with this, wrote this commentary in 1843. Here's what he said about this. If a Jew smote his neighbor, the law merely smote him in return. But if the blow was given to a parent, it struck the smiter dead. The parental relation is the center of human society. God guards it with peculiar care. To violate that is to violate all. Whoever tramples on that shows that no relation has any sacredness in his eyes, that he is unfit to move among human relations who violates one so sacred and tender. God is serious when he says to children, you obey, you honor your parents. By the way, this injury is not always physical. This injury can be attitudinal. Look at verse 17. And he that curseth his father or his mother. What does it say? The idea of curse here is to lower in prestige. Or as the commentator Cole says, to curse was to will and pray the downfall of the other with all one's heart. It represented the attitude from which sprang acts like striking or murder. I've heard kids quoted this saying, I hate you. And they say this to their parents. That's a curse. If a child would ever do that. And now you wonder why we took how many weeks this last summer to go through what the Bible says about parenting? Folks, God is serious when it comes to children obeying, not just obeying, but honoring their parents. And I think some of us would look back and say, boy, I failed in that area myself. Lord, forgive me for the way I treated my parents at times. You know what? There is a generation that curseth their father and doth not bless their mother. Later on in that same chapter, it says, the eye that mocketh at his father and despiseth to obey his mother, the ravens of the valley shall pick it out and the young eagles shall eat it. George Bush said, he who could break the bonds of filial reverence and duty to such a degree as in word or action to abuse his own parents, clearly evidenced thereby that he was lost to all goodness and abandoned to all wickedness. Folks, God is serious when he says, honor your father and your mother. Here's the consequences of not doing it. So there's injury to parents. We go on in verse 16 to injury and kidnapping. This is between that which talks about honoring parents. Verse 16, and he that stealeth a man and selleth him, or if he be found in his hand, he shall surely be put to death. Wow, there's a lot of a capital punishment taking place here, isn't there? The death penalty was to be given for stealing a person. By the way, this does not just apply to stealing the servant of another man. This applies to stealing any other person. Men could kidnap another person, perhaps in their youth, and sell that young person into slavery out of malice or even out of greed. And can you think of anything that took place like this before the law was given? Can you think of any brothers who took their brother, threw him in a pit, ready to kill him? But when they saw the slave traders coming by, said, hey, let's just sell them. They were guilty of this sin. You know, I'm talking about Joseph in Genesis chapter 37. By the way, you will note that what is mentioned in verses 16 and 15, you go back to verse 15, is also mentioned in 1 Timothy 1. I've got it up here on the screen for you. Knowing this, that the law is not made for a righteous man, but for the lawless and disobedient, for the ungodly and for sinners, for unholy and profane, for murderers of fathers and murderers of mothers, for manslayers, for whoremongers, for them that defile themselves with mankind, for men stealers, for liars, for perjured persons, and if there be any other thing that is contrary to sound doctrine. What does it say there? What is Paul telling Timothy? These things are contrary to sound doctrine. By the way, you'll also notice another heinous sin that is mentioned here in the list of these vices. That's the sin of sodomy. And it's right in there. Right there in the vice lists of kidnapping and murder and so forth. So injury and kidnapping. We move on to injury and quarrels. Verses 18 and 19. And if men strive together and one smite another with his stone, with a stone or with his fist, and he die not, but keepeth his bed. That means the idea that he's laid up in bed. But keepeth his bed. If he rise again and walk abroad upon his staff, then shall he that smote him be quit. Only he shall pay for the loss of his time. There's compensation. And shall cause him to be thoroughly healed. He's not only going to compensate for his time, he's going to compensate for his healing. He may have to pay the doctor's bills to make sure that he is taken care of. Well, somebody may respond, but he didn't mean to hurt him. It was an accident. This isn't fair. What's the answer? It's just. God's law is not based upon what we think is fair. God's law is based upon what he says is just. Then we get to injury to servants. And some may have questions about, you know, the Bible and slavery. We addressed some of that last week. But it's very clear that the children of Israel could have slaves. There were the categories we mentioned last week, the three categories. But we typically think of slavery and we equate it with the slavery that took place in this nation, that it was based upon skin color, and that the slavery in the Bible, that it was very cruel, like we've heard it was in our country. Not so. Look at what takes place in verses 20 and 21. If a man smite his servant or his maid with a rod and he die under his hand, he shall be surely punished. Now you would think, well, that word punish, what's the punishment going to be? Well, the word punished there is literally the word he shall be avenged. So if a man would strike his servant and kill him, what happens to the master? Death penalty. He shall be avenged. Thus the master too would die. Now we go on to see though in verse 21, notwithstanding if he continue a day or two, this is talking about the servant who had been struck, he shall not be punished, for he is his money. He is his property. The slave was the master's property. But if that servant lives a day or two and then dies, it would be clear, and I'm quoting again from a commentary, it would be clear to the judges that it was not the intention of the master to kill his servant. In other words, there was no premeditated murder involved. In this case, he shall not be punished. He shall not be avenged. The servant is his property. Now, let me just mention something here. If a man has property, do you normally just take your property that's valuable and go out and just destroy it? As his property, a man is not likely to treat his property so carelessly as to intentionally kill one of his servants. And neither would he mistreat the servant if he knew that he would lose his property. Go down to verse 26. If he just mistreats him, and here's what happens. If a man smite the eye of his servant or the eye of his maid that it perish, he shall let him go free for his eye's sake. Or if he smite out his manservant's tooth or his maidservant's tooth, he shall let him go free for his tooth's sake. Now, are you going to be careful if you have a servant and if you do any kind of an injury like that to him? Are you going to be kind of careful? You're going to be very careful. And so the laws that are being laid down here are very much to prevent abuse of servants. Unlike what is so commonly reported to have happened to slaves in America in the 1700s and 1800s. So that's injury to servants. Now we get to one that's kind of interesting. Injury to expectant mothers and the unborn. Here's a possible scenario. Let's read the verse first, verse 22. If men strive and hurt a woman with child, so that her fruit depart from her, and yet no mischief follow, he shall be surely punished according as the woman's husband will lay upon him, and he shall pay as the judges determine. Some years ago, there was an article in the Greeley Tribune where a lady wrote an article defending abortion, saying, see, look at Exodus chapter 21 and verse 22. And she quoted it, but she used the Good News Bible. Anybody familiar with the Good News Bible? They call it Good News for Modern Man. I've heard man say it's bad news for modern man. Here's what that, it's not even a translation, it's a paraphrase. Here's what that paraphrase says when you come to this verse. And I want you to see if you can catch this. If some men are fighting and hurt a pregnant woman so that she loses her child, but she is not injured in any other way, the one who hurt her is to be fined whatever amount the woman's husband demands, subject to the approval of the judges. But if the woman herself is injured, the punishment shall be life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, bruise for bruise. Do you see how this excuses abortion? How this excuses the killing of a child when it's still in the mother's womb? Because what it is doing is it is saying, as long as the mother is okay, then everything's fine. And what they're trying to say here is that if the child is harmed, it doesn't matter. So the abortionists would like to use a verse like this to defend abortion. Say, see, life is not that precious because the child is not yet born. It is simply a fetus. What do you say to that? When that woman wrote that in the newspaper, I took my Bible out and I did some study. And I wrote a response. This is probably 10 years ago. Look at that verse again. If men strive and hurt a woman with child, so that her fruit depart from her. What does it mean that her fruit, the fruit is obviously the child, depart from her. You know what that's talking about there? It's talking about premature birth. It's not talking about the child dying. If her fruit depart from her, the word depart has nothing to do with the death of the child, the fruit. But as the Hebrew word denotes, it has to do with the going forth or the premature birth of the child. Now, there's some possible consequences. If there's a premature birth, the child has not died yet, okay? If no mischief follow, you see that in verse 23? Well, what could that mischief be? Mischief, if you go back in the book of Genesis, and by the way, you'll see this where Jacob is talking about sending his son Benjamin along with his brothers to go down into Egypt. And what is Jacob concerned about in sending Benjamin down to Egypt? He's concerned that mischief will follow. That mischief will take place. What's he talking about? He's afraid that his son Benjamin's going to be killed. He's going to die somehow. He's going to lose his son. That's the word that's used here. It refers to the death either of the mother or the child. So if there is no death of either the mother or the child, the woman's husband can sue for any other damages that did take place, because it says there, he shall surely be punished. Now, I've got to point something out, because we looked at that word punished earlier and said that it had to do with being avenged. This is a different Hebrew word now. It has to do with he shall be fined. So if either the mother or the child is injured in any way, the man who caused that injury, he will be fined. Whatever the judges determine. By the way, why did this woman get involved in the first place? It was an argument between her husband and another man. And she was ready to step in. My wife tried to do that once. My neighbor was in his yard and he got mad at me. And he picked up his shovel. Man, my wife came outside. Don't you dare touch him! You know. Man, it scared me and scared him too. But, this is what happened in this case. You know, where this man, they got into a struggle. The woman got in between. She was hurt, and the unborn baby perhaps was hurt as well. Hey, there's a fine. But the judge, who determines the fine? The judges determine it. Why do the judges determine it? You know, if the woman would determine it, or if the husband would determine it, I mean, they'd get the very last bit of money out of that guy. They'd do everything they could to get it. So that was to prevent excessive fines. But what if death does follow? What if mischief to either the mother or to the infant takes place? Then thou shalt give what for what? Life for life. Folks, instead of being an abortionist verse, this teaches the exact opposite. This is teaching how precious the unborn child is and how precious the mother's life is. It does not support abortion at all. In fact, it strongly goes against it. So if any mischief does follow to either the mother or to the infant, then a corresponding severity, then a corresponding severity of punishment, including the death penalty, life for life, was to be exacted. The unborn child is just as much human as the child's mother. Well, now we get into verses 23 to 25, and you saw this up there. It's called Lex Talionis. Now, I don't claim to be a lawyer. I never want to be a lawyer. Too many lawyer jokes out there. But look at verse 23, the last part. Life for life. You get into verse 24. Eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burning for burning, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. And when you read that, by the way, this has influenced modern day jurisprudence. Even today. And this is called Lex Talionis, or the law of retaliation. When you read this, and you don't answer this out loud, but do you think negatively or positively when it says life for life, tooth for tooth, burn for burn, wound for wound, bruise for bruise? You know what? We typically think, this is barbaric. Because, see, we're thinking about what's fair. No. The Bible's teaching what is just. Life for life. Tooth for tooth. I read a good article. By the way, this was in the Frontline magazine, the magazine I've tried to get you to subscribe to, that's put out by the Fundamental Baptist Fellowship. There was an article in there some time ago that addressed this very thing. And let me find the author's name so that I give him the credit for it. His name was Klapperich. A pastor, I remember the name of the church was Calvary Baptist, but I don't remember. I think it might have been in Florida. And he wrote an article on this very passage. I don't know if he has a background as an attorney or what, but he says this: many Christians think that this expression from Exodus 21 is a sub-Christian call for a draconian punishment. Some even believe that Jesus criticized and repealed this statement from the law. You'll see that in Matthew 5:38-42, where Jesus said, "Ye have heard that it hath been said, you know, eye for eye and tooth for tooth." So that's his quote there. And then he gets to verse 24 and he says, verse 24 is popularly assumed to demand the loss of an eye or tooth as punishment of an offender. However, it is actually, and what's the next word? Limiting the extent of punishment, of a punishment. In other words, it is advocating that the punishment fit the crime. That is actually what is being advocated here. Not to exceed the crime, as would be the tendency of the offended or the one who was injured. In other words, if you remove my eye, let's put it another way. Because, you know, what's more important, your eye? Would you rather do without a tooth or without an eye? I think everybody, how many vote for tooth? Anybody vote for eye? Yeah, I didn't think so. Yeah, you would rather give up a tooth than you would your eye. So now let's say you knock my tooth out. I'm going to say, you know what, I'm going to demand your eye. No, see what this does is it says, the punishment has to fit the crime. What happened to you is you got a tooth knocked out. You can't demand an eye on that person. The punishment has to fit the crime. So it's actually a legal statement limiting the kind of punishments that can be inflicted for crimes that do not involve the loss of life. Now, if life is lost, you have the previous instructions that are given. By the way, who determined the lex talionis? Did the offended person determine what the consequence was? No, let's look at this. Because it says, look at verse 22. It's still following the last part of verse 22. He shall pay as who determines? The judges determine. So the judge is the one who determines, okay, you knocked his eye out. Okay, it's an eye. But what he is trying to do, what the judge is supposed to do, is to make sure that it does not exceed the crime itself. Because wouldn't that be what we would do? I mean, I would. Man, you knock my tooth out? Hey, I'm going to get two of yours. I mean, that's the way we would view, humanly speaking, is to exact more from somebody than they actually did to me. Now, when you think about Matthew chapter 5, verses 38 to 42, Jesus is no more calling for the repeal of this command any more than he's calling for the repeal of adultery or murder that he mentions in that same chapter and the consequences that take place as a result. In fact, Jesus is teaching in harmony with the context of Exodus 21:24 that the commandment is not about demanding a penalty with no room for mercy. Christ recognizes that Exodus 21:24 is a statement of just punishment, not one that leaves no room for mercy. We inherently recognize the need for mercy ourselves, but we tend to misuse Exodus 21:24 when we want vengeance on others. So what is Exodus? What is God teaching here? The limitations that would take place in the committing of an injury like this. So here you've got these injuries that result in murder to parents, kidnapping, quarrels, servants, expectant mothers, and the unborn. And the point that I'm wanting you to get here is that God is a God of justice. Even when it comes to His people, so much that is taking place in our society today is unjust. Murder that goes unpunished by not executing the murderer, that is unjust. Children who disobey their parents, that is unjust. And when they get by with it. The stealing and selling of men, women, and children, folks, that is unjust. Uncompensated injuries, that is unjust. By the way, you don't read of any prisons here, do you? Any jails? I'll let you think about the rest of that. The abuse of innocent men, women, and boys, and girls by those in authoritative positions. Abortion. The intentional taking of lives of the unborn children. That's unjust. You know what? God is a God of vengeance. Do you believe that? Even if man shirks his responsibility in making sure that justice takes place, God is a God of justice. God will make sure that justice takes place. And so I close with this verse that I've shown you before. God is jealous and the Lord revengeth. The Lord revengeth and is furious. The Lord will take vengeance on his adversaries and he reserveth wrath for his enemies. But you also notice this in verse 3. The Lord is slow to anger. And great in power, and will not at all acquit the wicked. God is a God of justice. And that's what He wants for His people as well. Father, I pray that we would be grateful that You are